GBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. The latest winter storm enveloping a lot of the U.S. is historic in some places, particularly in the south. Whiteout conditions in the Texas Panhandle, flights delayed and canceled at multiple airports.
Highways shut down. Treacherous travel from a once-in-a-generation Gulf Coast whiteout crippling the deep south. The first blizzard warnings ever issued for the state of Louisiana. Howling wind and more than 10 inches of snow in spots. Authorities shutting down dozens of highways, overpasses, and bridges.
ABC's Victor Oquendo. A major fight is brewing over President Trump's executive order ending birthright citizenship in the U.S. Attorneys general from 22 states and two cities are now suing the administration in a bid to stop the order. Ichiro Suzuki, CeCe Sabathia, and Billy Wagner all elected to Baseball's Hall of Fame. Suzuki falling one vote shy of unanimous. They'll all be inducted July 27th. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anywhere at the WGBW website, wgbw.fm.
The Bucks at midseason. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA, the Bucks are at the halfway point of the regular season. 41 games completed, 41 to go. The Bucks are 24-17 so far, thanks to having just won four in a row at home. And they're in fourth place in the Eastern Conference behind Cleveland, Boston, and New York. Bucks forward, Chris Middleton.
Yeah, with the up and down season that we've had so far, I think we'll take it. Knowing that, you know, we could be better in a lot of different areas. There's a lot of games I think we dropped that we thought we should have won. But to be 7 games over 500 with, you know, all the highs and lows, I think we'll take it right now. Hopefully, you know, we keep getting those wins up and getting a higher win percentage.
The Bucks on the road tomorrow night in New Orleans against the Pelicans. Tip-off time, 7 o'clock. NFL, the Chicago Bears have a new head coach, 38-year-old Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator of the Detroit Lions. And the Ohio State Buckeyes, the new national champions of college football after beating Notre Dame 34-23. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Max Inc. on Civic Media with Mike and Wendy from Sunspot. Can you imagine the mosh pit on the bridge that could happen?
Oh, well, that's how the original series was, when they moved the camera, whenever it's like the red alert. That,
right.
Yeah. That was the mosh pit.
Yeah. And everybody had to like fake like.
Right. Lean left. Great. Lean right.
Yeah.
Join us for all the fun with Max Inc. on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. And boy, what a day yesterday was, wasn't it? Did you watch the speeches? Did you see the rambling? Get ready for it. We've only got 3 years and 363 more days of it. Yeah, but on day one, it was dictator day and there were executive orders signed. Freed the patriots and the hostages. In fact, some 1,500 quote-unquote patriots and hostages were pardoned by Trump as part of their activities, their good God-fearing, country-loving activities on January 6th, 2021. Six sentences were commuted, and I guess a party. We're gonna then hold January 6th as like a Heroes Day. I can see that happening. And the thing is I sat and I watched Trump talk a lot. And, oh my gosh, talk a lot. It's going to get worse. And I couldn't help but think, he's back. That's not a good thing. With more grievances than ever, whinier than ever. Actually, whinier than I remember. And less coherent. So it's going to be an interesting 4 years of rambling, self-aggrandizing speeches. Get ready for it. But the first set of executive orders, he repealed 78 Biden executive orders. We don't know what those are yet. And then did what we said he was going to do yesterday on the program, He went after federal workers freezing hiring. He went after them to make them go back to work. Also then froze all federal regulations. Yay. We evidently have now, again, I guess, withdrawn from the Paris Climate Treaty. And then he signed another letter saying that here's a letter saying I'm leaving the Paris Climate Accord. And then we're going to use, there was one to prevent government censorship. And then one to end weaponizing, you know, government against political appointees, which I found particularly interesting. Because if you listen to the whining, if you listen to the rambling, the incessant whining, oh my gosh, the crying, the complaining, if you listened, it was all about grievance. It was all about, we're going to go get them. And he was quite angry that Biden had preemptively pardoned, you know, Liz Cheney and Fauci and a bunch of folks. So, yeah, fun. What I found really interesting is how my Red Hat friends were all losing their mind over Biden pardoning people. But when Trump did it, it was a hero in action. And the thing that gets me, and again, you know, the clown show is going to happen every day. They need it. They need the circus. They need the distraction so that we, like cats following a laser pointer, will be distracted when they do all of the horrible things that Project 2025 has laid out. They're doing all of it. And I found interesting that the New York Times published an article that said, look, you know what Trump's about to do, this economic experiment that they're laying out in front of us? You know, tax cuts for the very rich, tariff increases at a time when interest rates are still high. Prices are still high. It's like every bit of negative economic activity you could do that would raise the costs of things, you're going to all do simultaneously in the hope that by some magic, prices will come down. I mean, that's the part that's quite remarkable to me anyway. We're going to try all of it. So I went to the Walmart website because I don't go into Walmarts. And a dozen of eggs is $4.17 right now at the Walmart. So that's going to be my bench going forward. If Walmart doesn't drop eggs down to a buck by tomorrow, I got questions. I got problems. Gas prices were $3.05 in my neck of the woods. So, you know, it's only going to have to drop by 2/3 tomorrow. We'll see. We'll see if this economic dream is going to happen. Now, we all know that it's not. And look, even the sane and rational among us who make a joke about this know that Trump's got very little power and control in this world when it comes to this stuff. Now, he has issued an executive order to tell all of the people who work for him in the government to go after lowering prices. And good. You know, I said, you know, Biden should have done that. And I said there should have been a senator who held commissions to go after corporate America and go after the greedflation and find why prices went up so quickly. Now, a lot of it had to do with a broken supply chain. A lot of it had to do with, you know, the way that we allow corporations to monopolize. There's a lot of that. We don't want those answers, though. No. We're going to find something else, and it's always going to be blaming the little guy. But for me, watching what they do outside of the circus is what I think is really important. And this is what we've been saying all along. While he's performing, you know, being the monkey standing there with the grinder, his crew, the billionaires, the CEOs, the well-to-do, they're all going to do what they're there to do. And that is to deregulate. That is to cut taxes for themselves. That is to destroy labor rights. That is to do a lot of the things that they've been telling us they're going to do and that they wrote in Project 2025. We're going to see all of those things come to fruition. And in a way that they couldn't do the first time around. Understand, when Trump won the first time, nobody thought he was going to win. Except me. Now, they're all on board. They know that they've got their monkey in the grinder. They know that it's their circus now. They know that they can go in and get their CEOs, the head of every agency. Billionaires can get the head of every agency. When you've got a billionaire, Treasury Secretary saying, we're going to cut taxes for the very wealthy, but you know what? We're just not going to raise the minimum wage. I think you should know all you need to know. But we as working people, I think maybe we need a little time to digest. I think America is waking up today going, what have we done? You want to talk about buyer's remorse the day after? I think we're feeling that across the country right now after a whole day of listening to whatever that was, the whiny, the grievance, the oh, poor me and how wonderful I am. Yeah, it's going to get worse. But there's an opportunity here. There's an opportunity to organize, to stand up, to fight back. And we can do it. I want to hear your thoughts. Did you watch? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you're looking at the executive orders, as we've been talking about, lots of them. I haven't seen one yet on the tariffs that were supposed to come on day one. And look, this is part of the, as we just discussed, this is part of the new economic world where we're going to cut taxes, raise tariffs, especially where prices are high and wages are low. And that's supposedly somehow, through whatever magic and powers that Trump has, that's supposed to go against every economic law and actually work out. We will see. Here to share some thoughts on what we know at this moment on the tariff front, I've asked my good friend Scott Paul to come share some thoughts. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, good to be with you.
So what do we know so far? I thought day one, you know, the dictator day, or you know, I'm not sure when the dictator ends, but I thought day one it was going to happen. Tariffs across the board, everything on China, a bunch on Mexico, everybody else. Where are we?
What did we hear? The 60-25-2010 plan, right? Or something like that. I guess that was what it was during the campaign. So we're not there yet. And I don't know that that's a bad thing necessarily. And look, I know you and I both agree that tariffs have a role
Absolutely.
In economic policy and that we should not be afraid of them
Without
and
question.
That we should probably wield them more,
sure.
right? You
yep.
know, and so it actually pains me to see some Democrats just like they're totally against tariffs no matter what now because Trump is for that. I don't think that's the right approach with the Democratic Party at all. But setting that aside, here's what we know. And obviously, this is changing all the time. There's not something that's going to put tariffs into place like right now, like, you know, today or tomorrow. Trump has verbally said that Canada and Mexico may get hit with tariffs as high as 25% as soon as February 1st. And that's based on fentanyl on the border. So we'll see, you know, that opens it up to a negotiation that they could get rid of that. Trump has said he put into place an executive order that would delay the enforcement of the TikTok law, which the Supreme Court said was constitutional, and there's really no wiggle room there. But somehow he's going to delay enforcement of it for a while. But he said if China doesn't agree to a sale, he might put 100% tariffs on Chinese products. Again, verbal. There's nothing written about this at all, other than the order delaying enforcement of the TikTok law, which he really doesn't have the authority to do.
Yeah.
By the way,
if I could just stop here, I just want to talk about the TikTok thing, because you know, my son called me on Sunday and said, "Hey, do you know anything about this?" And I said, "Yeah, a little bit. The Supreme Court, you know, ruled that the law was constitutional. It was a unanimous decision, both Democrats and Republicans. It was a really bipartisan piece of legislation. The Supreme Court unanimously upheld it. So it's going to go into effect." He goes, "But I'm hearing that Trump is saving it. Didn't Trump start this?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, he did. And sadly, you're going to have a very long life and you're going to suffer a lot because you have a memory. And that's a bad thing in America today, that you're going to remember what the previous guy did that he's now taking care of." But what my son was saying is his friends are saying that, you know, Trump's a hero. Trump's the savior of free speech. He saved TikTok.
Yeah, well, and then TikTok, like, put it up on their screens, too, apparently. I mean, I don't get it, but they're like, thanks to the president. Which is what he probably demanded. But
he wasn't president yet, but, you know.
Yeah. You're right. It is one of those things that people do have short memories. People can take both sides of a position and try to come out smelling like roses. But I do think, I'm going to be real here. I mean, I care a lot more about other manufacturing security issues than I do about TikTok, but I realize most Americans care a lot about TikTok because either they're really for it or they're really against it. And there's, 130 million, whatever, accounts in the United States. So it matters to a lot of people. But I mean, to me, I think that I would have liked to see a firmer approach on that, because I think that's how you need to handle China. That you need to say, look, we're going to enforce the law. We're going to be tough. We're going to give you some room to show to us that you're changing your ways. I don't see that happening on trade, by the way, or on TikTok. Rather than doing this punting thing, which is going to endear him to all the TikTokers and set a bad precedent for some of these other issues with respect to China. And all he said, Rick, about the rest of China trade right now is that he wants his administration to review how well his first China deal went, his phase one deal.
Oh, the best deal ever? You mean that one?
Yeah, he called it the best deal ever, and they literally did nothing.
Nothing.
Okay, China did nothing. So that's what they're going to fight. And then he's also said to his administration that we got to look at, you know, the way countries are manipulating their currencies. And there's already a process in place to do that. But he said that as well. And he parked for the time being a conversation about the universal tariffs, either the 20% tariffs or the 10% tariffs. That's not to say they're off the table, but it is to say that they're still trying to figure out the right way to do that, and whether to use some of them for revenue, for the tax cuts they want to do. Some Republicans have floated that in the Congress. So there's all sorts of technical issues there with how you do it, how long you can do it, when you can do it, et cetera. And there's different paths to get there. But yeah, that was not one of the day one executive orders. That's true.
Now, there was a lot of interesting stuff, some pardons and all of that. But for me, it was the tariffs that I was looking to see how he was going to act on that. I knew the other stuff, kind of had a sense of where the other stuff was going to go. But that, because ultimately for me, it is about the jobs. It's about creating good union jobs, about recreating communities. It's about building that economic opportunity that I think Biden was on the right track doing. And I fear that his legacy is going to be, completely steamrolled, because the very first executive order Trump signed was repealing about, I think, what, 78 of Biden's executive orders. And for me, I'm looking at this going, I think Biden did some of the really good stuff we needed. working on reshoring manufacturing, building our infrastructure, investing in that. A lot of the push towards, you know, doing what my grandparents' generation did to make this country great. I fear Trump is either going to undo or take credit for himself.
Yeah, that's right. And I just want to, I think it's worth saying this, and these are just the facts, and your listeners can agree with them or disagree with them, but they can just look it up. I mean, energy. We've never produced more crude oil and natural gas in the United States of America than we have during the last year of Joe Biden's term, okay? We're already pumping out a massive amount of fossil fuel, all right?
Yeah.
Whether you love it or you hate it, that's where we are.
But it doesn't matter. Facts don't matter. Keystone XL. When I say that, and I've said it 1,000 times, Scott, I've said it over and over and over. We are drill baby drilling like never before. And yet I will get Keystone XL.
Oh, I know. I know. But if you look at the data, that's exactly what it shows, that Trump is starting from a position of strength there. Same with economic growth. Like, we're outperforming nearly every other economy in the world right now. And so he's like, it's like being the guy in one of those 4x100 relays, and you might be really slow, but you have a 75-yard lead. And so there's no possible way. I mean, you got to try really hard not to win that thing. But that's kind of where, you know, in a lot of ways, what Biden has handed over to Trump. On this, again, the big exception to that, I think, is a lot of the unfinished work on the trade policy.
Right.
That you know, I think that, you know, Biden was very strategic about how he applied some tariffs, and he started to do that, but I don't think he finished it. And so I think, you know, I think that's why it's worth focusing on as well, because that's going to be a key thing to see whether we can preserve the auto, steel, other jobs and grow some new ones in not only those sectors, but semiconductors, some of the clean energy manufacturing and what have you. And a lot of that does hinge, Rick, on how well he rolls out a tariff strategy.
Well, let me ask you, you brought up the green energy sector, the clean energy sector. You know, how much of what Biden's legacy was in moving us in a direction towards renewables, towards battery technology, you know, towards the wind, you know, solar, wind, all that stuff, where Trump is, you know, executive orders to undo a lot of that stuff. And we're going to basically do what Reagan did in 1980. You know, Carter put solar panels on the White House. Reagan ripped them off. You know, the same thing, you know, Obama, you know, did a lot to try and, you know, build solar panels. Republicans did everything they could do to destroy that. It seems like every step forward comes with two steps back.
Yeah. And I think part of this is that the cat's out of the bag already. And, you know, Texas is a very conservative state, and they obviously drill a lot of oil there. But they also have a massive amount of wind energy because it's a windy place, right? And so they're not going to stop doing that.
Yeah, but did you hear? Did you hear his rant?
Oh, I did. Did you hear this
mindless rambling about whales being killed by windmills?
I don't know what the hang up is, but here is what Biden, I think, was setting out to do, and what I hope Trump will do too, is go all in on all this energy stuff and to have an advantage across the board, whether it's in nuclear or solar or wind or other renewables, along with the fossil fuels for the time being, because we still, you know, like it or not, do a lot of that stuff. And also our allies are suffering because of the situation in Russia.
Yeah.
Okay. But I also think here's the problem. Like, if Trump gets rid of too much of this, and there's still demand for solar panels, they're going to once again come from China instead of the United States. Same for a lot of this other stuff. And so we have to be very careful about how we approach this, because the Biden approach is like, you know what? We're using some of this stuff. We ought to be making it here too.
Yeah.
We ought to make the solar panels here. So they're building a big solar panel factory in Marjorie Taylor Greene's district in Georgia. Right. I mean, you don't want to see that stuff close up. That would be just that would be, you know, backfire, I think, in a lot of ways on Trump. Or a battery factory in North Carolina or in Kentucky. Why would he want to do that? So, yeah. So he's got to walk a fine line on sounding so vitriolic on all of this stuff, but not doing stuff that's actually going to cause factories to close up here, because there is a real risk of that if it's mishandled.
No, I agree with you, but you know, I look at this shipbuilding case that's going on.
Yeah.
And look, if I maybe I got this wrong, but you know, Trump's like, well, you know, we don't have the capacity. And it seems like that he's okay with it being made somewhere else, or am I reading this wrong?
Yeah, I mean, you could read it that he thinks that we can't do it, but maybe South Korea can, right? Or some deal like that. I'd like to think it's that South Korea still does build a lot of ships, and maybe they could invest in some of our own shipyards with union workers and do that. And I don't know that I have a problem with that necessarily, because they do have a lot of know-how in that. But the major point of it, and I know Mike Waltz, who's his national security advisor, understands this, because he was at the forefront of a lot of these efforts in the Congress, is that we do not have the capacity here at home, and that is a problem. And the solution is not to shift from China to South Korea. It's to redevelop those yards that were basically just doing repair work in the Bay Area in California, or in Portland, or in Seattle, or in Philly now, you know, in Philadelphia, and in Maine, and in Virginia, and in the Gulf Coast, which has been renamed. But I think that, you know, he'll have an opportunity to lay out a shipbuilding strategy in the United States that could be really helpful from a jobs perspective, from a supply chain perspective, and also from a national security perspective, yeah. Rick.
Now, I want to get your thoughts on some of the labor leaders who have come out and said, look, we're willing to work with them. I've gotten some heat from people, for Sean Fain, for instance, who wrote an op-ed, said, yeah, we're willing to work with him where our interests lie. And I'm like, look, you know, the reality is that's what labor leaders should all be doing. Look, there are places where maybe you can work together. And in those places where you can't, well, then you got to put up your dukes and get in there and mix it up. But I got a lot of blowback from the Fain thing.
Yeah. Well, look, and I think Sean Fain is right about this, that, you know, the USMCA, which Trump negotiated, isn't working right now. There's too much auto production in Mexico. There's not enough in the United States yet. Okay. And so it does need to be renegotiated, and it's going to take a strong position to do that. And what made it work the last time is that you had some Democrats who were trade critics, people like Nancy Pelosi, who are saying, look, we'll work with you on this to get this across. And so, you know, we obviously have a Republican Congress right now that's a little more free trade in a lot of ways than Trump is. So we'll see how this works. But I do think that ought to be the approach. It's why, you know, the steel workers with the shipbuilding case, along with other unions, you know, Biden started it. They want Trump to finish it, right? And same with the USMCA. Let's see if we can get this to work better. And here's a guy, you know, in Trump, who talks about these tariffs and the trade imbalances all the time. Put your money where your mouth is, and let's get something done on this. And I am all for, and I pledge, I know we will be working with folks in the administration to try to get some positive things done for working people. Yeah. And, you know, that's my approach. You can either ignore it, or you can try to, you know, get some good.
No, and I know that's been your approach all along. Even during the first administration, you were saying yeah. the same thing. We're willing to work with them where we can, obviously, because that's our position. But do you think this time around, this is kind of the last area I wanted to ask you about, are you seeing, as I am, a much more reserved tone, a more conciliatory tone, more of, yeah, we're willing to work together where we can, in the hopes that maybe the focus will be on where we can instead of where we can't? Are you seeing that as a different strategy or surrender?
Yeah, you know what? For me, it's too early to tell. But what I don't like, and I raised this up at the beginning of our conversation, the Democratic point of view that if Trump says something about tariffs, we have to say the opposite instead of having their own plan.
Right.
I think that's wrong. And I think that's self-defeating. I think they ought to come to him with a plan that says, here's how we'd like to do something. Let's talk. Let's see if we can get something done.
Here's how we can put your name on something.
Yeah, that's right. And from the Trump perspective, look, I think that, you know, the again, agree with them or disagree with them. And you know, and you got to look past the personalities here. And it's very hard to do. I realize that. But there are some very smart and competent people, even if you disagree with them, they're going to be working on some of these economic policy issues. And some of them may be entirely out of touch because they're hedge fund managers or whatever. But they're also very savvy. They want to get deals done and they realize the clock is ticking. And so there is an opportunity to engage. Yeah. Okay. There is an opportunity to engage.
We'll see. The Gulf of America t-shirts, where are we going to make those?
God. Next question.
I can't even believe that that's even, never mind. But Scott, as always, I appreciate the thoughts, the input, always great stuff.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Rick. Thanks so much for having me on.
Our good friend, Scott Paul. I thought for sure it was going to be Made in America. Of course. Of course. Even though it's a stupid thing. Can you believe I don't know. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
From Ashwaubenon to Alloway, this is 97.9 WGBW. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, scattered flurries, temperatures rising up above zero in the overnight. For tomorrow, a mostly cloudy day, still some flurries, not as cold, highs low 20s. Colder again for Thursday, mostly sunny and a high only in the mid-teens, but warming back up for the weekend. Right now, it's zero.
Mino and the mayor.
He's negotiating with our paid sponsor here. Not
sorry. That is true. Sorry. I forgot you were a paid sponsor.
Kristen Ambos, Point Mortgage Corporation. How are you, Kristen?
I am good. How are you guys
Excellent.
Doing?
Nice to see you.
I freaking love starting my mornings with you.
We love having you here. We really do.
Mino and the mayor, weekday mornings 6 till 9 on 97.9 WGBW and 98.3 and 96.5 WISS and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So evidently, according to the Wall Street Journal, MAGA is taking back American culture. And if that's true, if they're right, you know, do we all have to wear, you know, cowboy boots and cowboy hats or red hats? Do we have to wear goofy shirts? Do we have to go back to the trifold hats? I mean, after all, on Inauguration Day, they all rushed inside to get out of the cold. I don't, that isn't very manly to me. I don't know. It's strange. But you look at all these NFL players who are now doing the Trump dance. You look at the fact that you had Carrie Underwood and Snoop Dogg, performing. Are we ready for MAGA culture? Here to share some thoughts on if we are or, well, where this could go. I've asked my good friend Sarah Burris to come share some thoughts. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how the heck are you?
So evidently MAGA culture, is that a thing yet? No. Are we going to hear more of this?
It's appeasement. I mean, what's funny to me is the idea that Carrie Underwood went from, you know, we're going to take a baseball bat to the front of your car because he cheats. But it's like, oh, he lies, he cheats. He's having affairs with adult film stars. He's been convicted of 34 felonies. That's fine. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Snoop Dogg was one that hurt, but at the same time, he's been sort of flirting with Trumpism for about a year. He and Trump seem to have this kind of, I don't know, feud. I never really heard about it, but apparently it existed. But then when he was asked about it, he was like, no, I got no problem with him. He freed, you know, what's her name that Kim Kardashian asked for. But then, you know, at the same time, I think you look at people, whether it's the CEO of TikTok or Elon Musk, which I think we should just start calling Elania. I think like he's the new Melania, right? And Snoop too. Like they're business people. Snoop went from being a rapper to having this massive empire that is very Kardashian-esque with a lot of stuff in his brand and with his name on it. So it's like, it's not necessarily this idea of a civil rights fighting, you know, black icon so much as it's, you know, somebody who's really embracing the idea of building wealth for himself and his family and generational wealth for, you know, all of his kids. So
how does that commercial go? Do-do-do-do-do. I mean, look, I mean, it's the truth. And, you know, all of this appeasement is about the money. It really, I think people have now realized you get on his good side, you'll get whatever you want. And, you know, Steve Bannon, you know, this week said that that he sees all of these billionaires. You know, you had the Meta guy, Zuckerberg. You had him. You had Alania. I love that. And I'll tell you, I'll bet you he gets more affection out of Alania than he does out of Melania.
But probably.
You got that one. You got the Apple guy. You've got you've got all of this money, all of these billionaires who Bannon believes have surrendered to him, have raised the white flag from the oligarchs. You agree?
I think that is the story that Bannon is telling himself to feel better about the fact that his entire ideology has been formed around this dude who will give anything to anybody who gives him money. You know, it is not necessarily that they have, that they are bending at the knee for him. I think they're giving him money and he is bending at the knee for them. And I think there is nothing more evident of that than what happened with TikTok. I mean, the CEO was at the inauguration and what, we had like an outage for 5 minutes, right? And then Trump was just like, no, turn that back on. We can't have, you know, kids complaining to me or whatever. I feel like I sound like, you know, get off my lawn. But really, it blows my mind because it's like I'm sort of siding with Steve Bannon here, right? Like, but at the same time, I'm like, bro, you have been part of this populist movement, and we've been sort of telling you for a while that this isn't real. Like, this ideology that you've created is, you've really ascribed these beliefs to Donald Trump, and they're not actually who he is or what he believes in. And again, it's not necessarily what the Republican Party has ever believed in from the Tea Party, you know, onward. That same right-wing populist ideology has believed in republicanism, and over again, they're being disappointed by, you know, again, the billionaire class who can buy a politician and control him. Of all of the horrible things that I think about and that I fear for the next several months, I think the one shining light is that at the very least, the oligarchy and the businessmen will not let the United States fall.
I agree. They're not going to let it fall. And I do think prices are going to come down a little bit. I think things will get better for working people just a little bit so that they can go, see, look at how wonderful fascism is. Because this is what we're talking about, isn't it? When the CEO class, when the moneyed interests can control your government and you've got a puppet president, this is what this kind of looks like. There's going to be kind of a hand in hand, the appeasement of the moneyed interest to let him think he's in charge, to do all of these things so that they can deregulate, they can cut taxes, they can crush workers' rights, they can do all of the things that their robber baron brethren of the past got away with in the good old days of the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s. They want that power back. They want the second Gilded Age, which we're right dead smack in the middle of.
Exactly. And I think the thing that really kills me that I've seen just in the last week with Democrats is watching, you know, like Surrender Schumer and Dick Durbin and Adam Schiff and these people who you would think would be, you know, fighting tooth and nail to hang on to whatever is possible and willing to fight with everything that they have because the norms are gone. Like, it's this has already happened. So this idea of play, oh, we're going to play inside the system until the system is no longer there. It's not there. He was elected. This is, it's over. And so I watch these people who act like everything is fine. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you? What world are you living in?
Well, look, I've gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, this is what America wants. This is what the majority of the people in this country want. Let them overreach. Let them do all of the horrible things that they say they're going to do. Go and slash and burn Medicare and slash and burn Medicaid and go after Social Security and privatize education and the VA and our military. Go do all of the wet dream list that you set out in Project 2025 because we deserve what we're going to get. There's part of me that really thinks this because the only way we're going to wake up and actually fight for something better, for better solutions, is when it hurts so bad that you don't have a choice. There's part of me that goes, incremental losing has gotten us where we are. We're the frog in the hot pot right now. And it's about time to just go, nope, I'm just jumping into the fire.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, too, where it's I'm still in this, like, burn it down place. And it just really bothers me to see... you know, people that I really admired, especially Adam Schiff, who I saw sort of as this fighter, turn into this guy that was talking to Nicole Wallace and acting like the norms would stand and that, you know, we should not, his argument was we shouldn't get rid of the cases against Carlos de Oliveira and Walt Nauta, the co-conspirators on Trump's classified documents case, because in 4 years, you know, we can bring back this lawsuit. And I'm like, what world are you living in?
You lost.
Do you really not think that on, you know, after a couple of hours, right? Like everything is just going to be completely rewritten. This week is going to be, and we were talking about, you know, what we expect and what we're going to see in the coming weeks. And I think it's just going to be an incredible bloodbath of pardons and the weirdest executive orders and things that will end up at the Supreme Court, but will take a while to get there. You know, this is going to end up being a litigation presidency because I think they're going to go all the way.
I do. I think they've got the steamroller keys and they don't care. They've got a lunatic behind the wheel and they don't care who they run over. And look, you brought up the TikTok ban. The Supreme Court made this decision. And Trump's going, nope, it was unanimous.
Yeah.
And Trump's like, nope, we're not doing it. Hasn't really even found the keys to the Oval Office yet. And he's saying, nope, not doing it.
But again, the difference between like all of these Republican, like Trump, this was his policy, right? This is Donald Trump's policy and his like very anti-China-esque thing. And Republicans and Democrats, like the Republican-led Congress, voted this ban in, right? And so, and then the Republican-led Supreme Court, like this conservative Trump appointed Supreme Court has upheld this TikTok ban. Yep. And then what changed is the CEO, you know, gave his money to the inaugural committee and was right there supporting Trump, you know, when he put his hand on the Bible.
Yeah, but Trump said it was about the kids. The kids love him over there on the TikToks. No, what's interesting is my son, when it was announced that Trump was gonna delay the ban, my son's like, hold on, isn't he the guy who started it? Isn't he the guy who was at the tip of the spear to ban TikTok? Wasn't he the guy? I go, you're gonna have a lifetime of problems because you have this really bad thing called a memory that most Americans just aren't burdened with. Because look, I think we've forgotten how bad the 4 years were when he was president. I think we've forgotten how chaotic it was. And I think we forget all of the lies, all of the misdirection, all of the misinformation, all of the total BS. But here we are.
Yeah, I have a young person in my life, too, that was blowing up my phone at, you know, 11 o'clock at night on Saturday being like, they already turned it off. I can't believe this. This is BS. And like, you know, all of the things. And she will turn 18 in May. And so she remember some of Trumpism, but for the most part, she was not necessarily as aware about politics as she is now.
But Trump saved TikTok.
Yeah, but watching this through her lens, you know, this and trying to explain to her everything about China and the human rights abuses and all of these things, and she's like, "But I'm not getting that content." Like, you're getting your peers are. You know, even if that is not your algorithm, even if you're still being fed, you know, cute furry animal videos, which is what she swears she gets, mm-hmm. and makeup tutorials. I just, you know, I asked her, like, do you know who the Uyghurs are? Do you know, what's happening in Hong Kong? Like, yeah. All of these things.
Stop.
I know.
This is exactly why liberals lose. This is exactly why Democrats lose. We've been explaining why. We're explaining why. Donald Trump saved TikTok. It's so much easier. Now, understanding that he's the one who began all this and the Republicans, Democrats united, a Supreme Court unanimous, all that stuff is explaining. Trump saved. He's the savior of TikTok. How do you beat that?
I just don't think that people are necessarily going to buy that. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they will.
Come on.
Obviously, the kid in my life is a little bit more advanced than and politically astute just because the stuff that I tell her. But
not everyone's got a wonderful aunt like you. Not everyone.
Yeah.
I wish I did. Mine's a crazy right winger. Sends me all of the Judicial Watch propaganda every day.
Oh, God help you.
Yeah.
Oh. That's brutal.
So, but here's the thing, and I guess this for me is where the rubber meets the road. I look at things, you know, cui bono, you know, to whose benefit. The idea of following the money for me is always key. Who's benefiting from it? And look, I think the billionaires have surrounded themselves with Trump because they know they understand return on investment. I say this all the time. My grandfather used to say, if a rich guy is going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because they understand return on investment. If a guy's going to spend $200 million to get someone elected, you better spend $201 million because he's going to cash in at our expense. And he's going to. Look, he's already seen his wealth explode. It's going to be even more. And that's going to be all across the board with all of these billionaires and all of these CEOs and all of these corporate types who are going to reshape our government in a way that will be unrecognizable in 4 years. And that, to me, is the scary part of this. The sideshow that is Trump, the circus that is the clown car of crazy, that's one thing. But the people who know why they're there, that's the scary part for me.
I agree. And I think that is... you know, the difficulty with people in my position, because the things that people want to read about are, you know, it's the adage in news, it bleeds, it leads. Yep. I could say the same is the truth for the clown show. Like, people want to see the train wreck. They want to see the clown show. That's what they're attracted to. And so it's difficult because you want to do, you want to sort of focus everybody's attention toward this idea of, you know, the downfall of the MAGA populism and sort of showcase what's happening, because you're like, guys, do you not see this? But again, I think you're right. Where for me, it was like, I think the second that the billionaires saw that Trump was willing to compromise on TikTok, they were like, oh, sweet. We just have to give him money, guys.
Yep.
And that's when I feel like we really started to see like the $1 million donations from Bezos and from Zuckerberg and all of those
work,
guys.
Man. Bribes work.
Yeah.
Bribes work.
Must be nice.
And look, there's nobody going to hold them accountable because you're going to have a guy named Cash as the head of the FBI.
God help us.
I wonder how much it cost to buy him. Finally, got to get your thoughts on the crypto president. Evidently, according to Axios, 89% of Donald Trump's wealth now comes from some crypto thing called money sign Trump or Strump, maybe. But the meme coin evidently is this financial asset that as of last Friday afternoon didn't exist, but now magically it accounts for 89% of his net worth. Again, bribes seem to work.
Yeah, I've never really understood the crypto thing, so I'm definitely not the best person to ask about it, because I just straight up think that it's a fantasy land. Like, this is the Grimm's fairy tales of of corporate finance. And I just don't buy it. Like, where, and I hate the idea of like, oh, I need something tangible, right? Like, that's not even necessarily the case. I think it's this idea that more establishment, the actual stock market, right? Like, those kind of entities who buy into that, they seem less willing to agree to the crypto world. It's the more erratic, you know, business types that I feel like are going toward the crypto stuff. The people that make me think of the subprime mortgage crisis,
the people,
right?
Who are
and the crash.
Yeah, the people who were your Ponzi scheme folks.
Yeah.
Because that's what I think it is. I think at the end, when it collapses, it's going to be the poor schmuck who bought in late, who's going to be left holding the bag. And there's no, but there's no backing. I mean, the U.S. dollar is backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. If the dollar collapses, the globe collapses. So pretty sure that there's going to be something at the back of that dollar. I've got some pretty good faith. This, everybody having their own coin or crypto thing or whatever. I'm definitely not giving Donald Trump money because he bankrupted a casino.
I know, right? I feel like we've had this conversation like a million times where, like, of all of the things in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, bro.
There you go.
That's like bankrupting a car wash or like, you know, like there, that just, I don't get it. I don't get
there
it.
There you go. We'll see. But here's the thing. It's going to be a long 4 years. Buckle up.
Yeah.
Get your chin strap on because it's going to get interesting. And that's why I'm glad you've signed on to continue on for this period of time until either we get swept up or pushed out the window. And I look forward to seeing you back here next week.
I could never leave you, Rick.
I appreciate it. Sarah, thanks so much.
Have a good week.
Our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out her work over at Raw Story. RawStory.com, the website. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2000. Just after midnight, 600 police officers clashed with picketing longshoremen in Charleston, South Carolina. The port in Charleston ranked the fourth largest in the United States. While South Carolina is one of the states with the lowest union membership, the port is an exception. The picketers were predominantly African Americans. They were represented by the International Longshoremen's Association, Local 1422 and 1771. That January, a Danish company, Nordana, announced they would unload their ships with non-union labor. The company had used union labor for more than two decades. 600 police were on hand to watch over 20 scabs brought in to unload the ships. The police force included helicopters and armored personnel vehicles. The longshoremen held a meeting to discuss their response. A picket of longshoremen was set up at the port. The police violently opposed the picket. They hurled gas grenades and racial epithets. They savagely beat Ken Riley, the president of Local 1422. Five union members were arrested and charged with felony rioting and faced 5 years in prison despite a lack of evidence, and they were placed under house arrest for more than a year. They became known as the Charleston Five. The South Carolina Attorney General vowed to make an example of these workers. He promised jail, jail, and more jail, and even going as far as comparing them to terrorists. The labor movement in South Carolina and beyond rallied to their defense. Yellow bumper stickers and billboards reading "Free the Charleston Five" could be spotted throughout the state. A plan developed to conduct actions at ports across the world to support these men and their right to picket. Faced with an outpouring of support, South Carolina reduced the charges to a misdemeanor and a $100 fine.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, evidently one of the first official acts when Trump took over, evidently they removed retired General Mark Milley's official portrait from the Pentagon. It was like minutes after Trump was sworn into office. Petulant much? And look, get ready for a lot of this. We're going to see a lot of these stories of revenge and retribution and going after perceived and actual enemies, people who disagree with him. Yeah. And how, you know, I was thinking about this during the break, you know, as a parent, you know, unfortunately, my kids are a little older, so they're now experiencing politics for themselves. Instead of getting it through my filter, they're beginning to pay attention. And this whole TikTok thing, which is really fascinating. My son, you know, says, you know, calls me and says, hey, that whole TikTok thing, didn't Trump start that? And I go, yeah, he did. And you're going to suffer a long time, my son, because you have a memory. You will not forget things. And that's not an American trait, evidently. Something in the water, I don't know. But he's like, you know, didn't he start all this off? And then wasn't it a bipartisan piece of legislation? And didn't his Supreme Court? And they go, yes, my son, yes. All of that, yes. Again, yeah, he started it. His Republicans were a huge part of it. His Supreme Court. And look, all the Supreme Court, unanimous. But because evidently the young people voted for or like him, we're not gonna ban TikTok. Now look, I was against the idea of banning TikTok from the beginning, because I'm a free speech guy. I am against a foreign corporation having ownership of something that gets right into our children's veins. And this is, you know, in a world, in the perfect world that I like to, you know, think we live in sometimes, I like to think that we're going to filter what our children see, hear, read, the content that they consume and that are indoctrinated by. I kind of think as parents, because we did it with our children. As a society, we're not. And I think back to it, and as I was saying, when all this stuff was at its height, because back then I said, look, if the government's going to do it, all they're going to have to do is sell to a U.S. company. And fine, TikTok goes on. Just break that link to the communist Chinese government. Evidently, they didn't want to do that. You know, there was this halfway kind of, well, we'll do this over here. No. We're in a moment right now where reality, folks, reality. The Chinese Communist government is collecting data on all of us, on everything. And in a way that has never been seen in human history before. And you go, but well, we do it too. And it's true. You know, as I'm sure our military has, information on everybody around the world as well. And those governments are trying to stop it as well. So for me, the idea of banning TikTok was kind of a fool's errand. I was in favor of banning foreign corporations from owning our media, and I still am. I do think you have to defend part of what your citizens are fed. But Trump's rationale was just because young people like me. It wasn't even a freedom argument. And are we surprised by it? No, not even a little bit. Because that's all we're going to see. People who are going to be willing to send him money and say nice things about him. And this is the weird moment that I think we're in, because we're seeing a lot of people trying that game. Will we see Democrats doing the appeasement tour, giving him what he wants? I don't know. I think you got to fight the tax breaks for rich people. I think you have to. I think you have to fight deregulation at every opportunity. I think you have to fight the attacks on labor unions. I think you have to fight with every bit of your being the massive change to our society that they're about to bring. What's interesting to me is my conservative friends, my red hat friends, talk about the social credit scores. We're moving not to social credit scores, but to religious credit scores. And we'll come up with some cute name, you know, God credit scores or something. But we're moving. And this cultural shift is going to be very interesting to watch from a spectator's point of view, from sitting back here watching it. Want to hear your thoughts. email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Now that we're in the middle of it, the Trump era hath begun. You ready for what's coming? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time. Maybe.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com.
This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. DEI kaput under the Trump administration. A memo out of the Federal Office of Personnel Management directs that all diversity, equity, and inclusion staff be put on paid leave, with the responsible agencies to develop plans to lay them off. The president announced a joint venture with three major tech companies on artificial intelligence.
They're starting with this $100 billion investment in physical infrastructure, but that could extend to $500 billion over the course of 4 years. And the first project they're starting with is a data center in Texas. So this is about the future of artificial intelligence and the infrastructure behind it, because to fuel AI development, you need a lot of power, energy, and data centers.
ABC's Selena Wang. The Gaza ceasefire appears to be holding. Israel's top general, Herzi Halevi, resigned on Tuesday, taking responsibility for security failures that tied to the Hamas sneak attack. This is ABC News.